The FBI is second-guessing his choices and investigating Nidal Malik Hassan's past while the next of kin in Texas try to find peace.
Honestly, our focus is my dad and our family right now. We are not actually, we don't have much concern about the shooter at this moment.
The FBI is concerned with the shooter, though, and why they didn't know that Nidal Malik Hassan was on the edge. More memorial services today in Fort Hood while investigators try to understand the motives of the man who took 13 lives, honoring the victims while the questions persist on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning. It's Tuesday, November 10th. I'm Celeste Headlee here with John Hockenberry.
Good morning, Celeste. Coming up on the program, padding your resume just for the variety of it. Job security, who needs it? The many-job approach to the modern economy, that's on the program. Also, banks pass their stress tests while the Dow is on fire. And defining cruel and unusual punishment, the Supreme Court looks at capital punishment for juveniles.
But first, Scott Shane joins us. Scott is the national security reporter for our partner, The New York Times. So, Scott, we're finding out that the FBI monitored and then stopped monitoring the alleged shooter in Fort Hood. Why did they stop monitoring him?
Well, apparently, they're being a little cagey about the details, but the most likely scenario is that they were monitoring a radical Yemeni cleric named Anwar al-Awlaki, who previously had lived and worked in the United States, and therefore they picked up Major Hassan's emails to this radical cleric who now lives in Yemen. And they examined those messages, and we don't know the contents exactly, but they say they were consistent with research he was doing at the time and didn't seem to pose any threat, so they decided to close the case, drop the case.
And do we have yet a motive in these killings?
We don't. Major Hassan has regained consciousness. He was shot, of course, during after he had shot and killed 13 other people. He's regained consciousness. On Sunday, investigators attempted to talk to him. He declined to talk to them. And he now has an attorney, and is not talking about his motive at the time. At this time, friends and family say he was distraught about the prospect of deployment to Afghanistan, and that he had become more religious in recent years. But we really don't have a motive beyond that.
Okay, Scott Shane, stay with us. He's national security reporter for our partner, The New York Times. But first, everything else we need to know this morning.
Well, in the headlines, continuing with news of Fort Hood, President Obama will be there today. White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs describes his trip.
The president will meet with families of those that lost a loved one last week, as well as speak to the larger memorial that will take place at the base.
At least 3,000 people are expected to attend the memorial. In Washington, the Supreme Court has rejected an appeal to stop the execution of the man convicted of the fatal sniper shootings 7 years ago. That means unless Virginia Governor Tom Kaine intervenes, John Allen Muhammad, the so-called D.C. sniper, will be put to death by lethal injection this evening.
Tropical storm Ida is creeping toward the Gulf Coast, bringing heavy rain and strong winds. Few people have evacuated the area despite some flooding. Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour says residents there need to heed the warnings.
While we're not asking anybody or telling anybody to evacuate, we are asking everybody to be alert, to prepare, to take care of yourself.
The storm is expected to make landfall later this evening. And Japan is pledging $5 billion in additional aid to Afghanistan. That comes just days before President Obama visits Tokyo. In the markets, a great day for Wall Street yesterday, and we're going to talk about that. All indices up at least 2%. The Dow's going to kick off at 10,227. That's the highest open in more than a year. The S&P will start trade at 1093, and the NASDAQ starts at 21.54. The mastermind behind the D.C. sniper shootings is set to be executed tonight. And in Fort Hood, Texas, family members are laying their loved ones to rest. And we're asking you, when you go through a traumatic event, is there such a thing as closure? Let us know at 8778-MYTAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning. Memorial services continue today in Fort Hood, Texas. 13 people have lost family members there after a man charged with helping them ended by shooting them down. Kaylee Vanneker lost her father, retired Chief Warrant Officer Michael Grant Cahill.
My dad would just, he loved to read. He could talk on hours about public affairs and current events. He was just, our house is like a library. He read two or three books at one time. You know, we would spend time playing games and sitting around the kitchen table and just talking about books and things that are going on and, you know, topics and history. And I'm just, you know, he was just a great father, always around, supportive. I mean, we talked. I always just called to talk to him about if I had questions on something or just needed to say hello.
That's Kaylee Vanneker talking about her father, retired Chief Warren.
In that voice trying to find her own sort of form of closure. And I was looking at the list of the victims.
Yeah.
You know, it is an amazing portrait of the diversity
on all of
American Army bases.
And you know, you can...
Every walk of life, practically.
You can look at them as victims. Obviously, these are more than victims. These are people who had family, they had history, they had their own loved ones and their own individual lives. And we have Chaplain Colonel Frank Jackson with us. He's the garrison chaplain at Fort Hood. And Chaplain Jackson... You heard that cut from Kaylee Vanneker, and you've been speaking with bereaved family members like Kaylee, and it sounds to me when I listen to her like the most important thing she's going through right now is trying to remember her father and talk about him as a man and an individual. Is that fairly normal with the others that you're speaking with?
I think so. Well, not I think so. I know so, because the important thing is, in fact, one of the things you do as chaplains and as grief counselors is to encourage the surviving members to remember the events with their family members and to celebrate those events with their family members that they can remember. And because that's all part of that healing process and the recovery process. And that was just a very powerful testimony that she shared about her father. Yes.
I mean, as John was saying, these victims are all extremely diverse, very diverse backgrounds. How do you find a common ground with them when you are trying to help them get over a very traumatic event? What common thread do you find with all these extremely different families and loved ones?
The common thread is the tragedy itself, how they work through and how they deal with the grief process is really an individual kind of event. So all we try and do as counselors and encouragers is to just kind of journey with them through that process and provide support, because everybody works at their own however their personality style and how things have affected them. So it's not, we don't tell people, okay, this is where you are and this is where you're going. It's a matter of just responding and just encouraging them as they go through the process.
Well, Colonel,
the common
thread
is the event itself.
Sure. Well, you know, Colonel, I listened to your remarks at the service on Sunday. I have to admire, you know, your tone and compassion. You know, the president is going to meet with the family members today. I don't know if the same family member we spoke with, but does something like that help, or does it create a sense of spectacle that maybe most people would want to avoid?
I think it all depends on how it's handled. I think it's fantastic that the president is taking the time to visit with the family members, and I know that every you know, we're going to do the best they can to try and keep it from being the spectacle. So I think there's going to be very much focus on the privacy or the engagement that he has with them as a group or individually or however that's going to be managed. But I think anytime anybody can step into that moment and say, I am sorry for your loss and I'm praying with you or encouraging you or walking with you through this journey, and it's a non-judgmental kind of thing, or not trying to tell people where they need to be, that I think that's always encouraging, whether it's the president or anybody else, to just say to someone, I want to come alongside of you in this moment, and if I can be of support or help, I think that's always very healthy.
Okay, thanks. Chaplain Jackson, Colonel Frank Jackson is the garrison chaplain at Fort Hood. Now, back to Scott Shane, who we spoke with earlier. He's the national security reporter for our partner, the New York Times. Scott, we talked a little bit earlier about the ties that Hassan may have had with a radical cleric, and why or why not the FBI may have dropped the matter after they were looking into Hassan. But that cleric, Anwar al-Awlaki, posted on his website that he called Hassan a hero and that he was a man of conscience who couldn't bear living the contradiction of being a Muslim and serving in the army that's fighting against his own people. How does that jibe with what we're hearing from friends and relatives of Hassan?
Well, you know, it appears not that, at least so far, investigators believe that Major Hassan was not part of some organized, foreign-based terrorist organization like Al-Qaeda. But based on what we know so far, it sounds like he was sort of reaching out and searching around. This guy, Anwar al-Awlaki, was born in the United States of Yemeni parents. Has sort of been back and forth between the United States and Yemen. He was actually portrayed in the press as a sort of a moderate. He had worked in a number of mosques in the United States, and he'd actually had some contact with a couple of the hijackers, the 9/11 hijackers, it turned out. He then moved to Yemen after 2002, and he's emerged as an extremely popular online figure for English language militants, and we don't know, again, what the messages were that Major Hassan sent to this guy in Yemen, but when the presumably the National Security Agency intercepted them and passed them on to the FBI, and they were read and assessed, apparently they did not express any intent to commit violence, and they were explainable as part of some kind of research project that Major Hassan was doing then at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington.
So he may be a moderate, he may be a radical, but I would imagine most people would say calling Hassan a hero is a little extreme. That's Scott Shane. Thank you so much. He's the national security reporter for our partner, the New York Times. President Obama will speak at today's memorial service for the shooting victims at Fort Hood.
I think my mother's looking forward to it. I think that's going to help us get closer to closure. At the same time, that's just one step closer to the finalization and realization that my dad is dead.
That's Kaylee Vanneker, the eldest daughter of a Fort Hood shooting victim, Chief Warrant Officer Michael Grant Cahler, in a conversation with The Takeaway, speaking about her father's memorial service coming up. It's 15 minutes past the hour now. Let's check in on some of the top news stories.
More details from Fort Hood. This is from the Washington Post. It's reporting this morning that Major Nidal Hassan gave a presentation to Army physicians last year, saying Muslims should be released as conscientious objectors instead of fighting wars against other Muslims in order to avoid, quote, adverse events. The Post says the final slide in that presentation reads, "We love death more than you love life."
In other news, the Supreme Court has declined to block the execution of John Allen Muhammad, the sniper who terrorized the Washington, D.C. area 7 years ago, killing 10 people. Muhammad will be put to death by lethal injection tonight in Virginia.
Tropical storm Ida is bearing down on the Gulf Coast, packing 60-mile-an-hour winds. Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour.
We don't think this is going to be a big, bad storm, but we all have been through this before, and it's important that you be prepared, that you be prudent, and be on the lookout.
In the middle of hurricane season at 6 o'clock this morning, Ida was 95 miles southwest of Mobile, Alabama, creeping north. The World Health Organization says the AIDS virus is the leading cause of death among women worldwide between the ages of 15 and 44. According to the study, 1 in 5 deaths among women in this age group is linked to unsafe sex.
And those are some of the stories that we're watching this morning. Coming up, the Dan Gross, our friend from the Newsweek magazine, is telling us how banks did on their stress tests. Are they stressed or healthy? We'll find out in just a moment.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
You know, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback or think there's any stories we should be covering on The Takeaway, contact us at 1-877-8-MYTAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. See ya.